so it's pretty...
Stop.
Okay. We're ready.
Stop. Will you stop, Dave? Will you stop, Dave? Stop, Dave. I'm afraid. Stop, Dave. I'm afraid.
All right, we're here. It's a Friday night. We had Lloyd Sloan on the line here just a moment ago, and he's dropped off unexpectedly, but he will be back. He'll be joining us this evening as we talk about the weather and anything else that comes up. Mike Slack had a little problem tonight. He's not going to be with us tomorrow night. We won't have a show. I'm doing the family Thanksgiving thing tomorrow. I had to work today, or tonight. I have to work tonight, which is highly unusual for me on a Friday night, but that's the way things are in retail sales at the Thanksgiving time. So I slept today and did zero show prep, but that's all right because our guest tonight, Lloyd Sloan, he can make up for me not being ready quite easily. I'm placing in a quick call back to Lloyd now. I don't know what happened.
Hi, it's Lloyd. Leave me a message.
Hey, Lloyd. You're back
at the tone. Please record your message. When you've finished recording, you may hang up or press 1 for more options. To leave a callback number, press 5.
I don't know what happened there, but we dropped you. And just a second here. That's you calling me on one phone and my radio here trying to leave a message with you on your phone. But we're back now. I was just telling the listening audience that I don't usually work on Fridays, but I have to work tonight. We'll cut this a little bit short, which is all right. Mike Slack can't be with us, and I did zero prep today, having forgotten even that I had a show tonight with the throw off in the schedule from the retail sales world, and was telling them that it's really absolutely perfect that I have you as a guest because I don't need prep time to talk to you. How's things going over there in your area? Are things heating up a bit still, or are things starting to cool down a bit? Lloyd? Well, maybe we've lost Lloyd again. Lloyd, are you there? Hello, Lloyd. Well, it appears that we have some problem connecting with Lloyd tonight. All my apologies.
Hello.
Hello, Lloyd. How are you?
Very good, sir. Very good. How are you doing, Dave? Long time no talk.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, we had a little trouble there. I don't know what happened. We had Lloyd before the show started, just as we switched over. I lost him.
I used to blame Verizon, but now I blame NSA. So.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't think the NSA does not want us to talk. This is clear.
How are things going in the east half of the state? Are things starting to quiet down a bit?
I didn't see any news reports today, so I can't say that they're quieting down. They may have, hopefully, over Thanksgiving, but it is warmer now, too, so I haven't seen reports. We're a long way from out of this. I mean, you really want my own perception. I think we're a long way as far as the Ferguson matter is concerned.
Right.
This is far from over. This will leave very long-standing divisions in the community. And, that's the way it is. I personally am not happy that we didn't at least get an indictment. I think that there needed to be a trial. Sometimes trials are valuable just to air it publicly and give a sense of fairness with the outcome.
Right.
And I don't think that's just part of what you have to do in a trial. So I'm not really trying to, I presume that Wilson is not, I mean, my presumption going in is innocent until proven guilty. I haven't seen it, but I do think there was enough to at least bring a trial. And certainly I sided with those who wanted to see at least that.
Does the odd behavior of the attorney general or the prosecutor in actually releasing all of the entire transcript of the grand jury, does that add to or subtract from the perception of fairness?
I think it helps. I mean, it would have been even worse if he'd have released nothing. So at least he released what he had. I think he knew he had to do that. But the people that I'm talking to that are really, truly familiar with grand juries, this is a very odd grand jury in the first place. This is not how prosecutors act. They do not. Normally, a prosecutor takes minimal information to a grand jury. In fact, there is no defense testimony at all in most grand juries. A grand jury is not a trial. A grand jury is just the last step that a prosecutor takes before he indicts somebody, and 99% of all grand juries do what they're told by the prosecutor anyway.
There are actually two reasons, purposes for impaneling grand juries. One is exactly what you said, to facilitate the indictment process. It's so prosecutors, it's designed theoretically, so prosecutors don't head into court maliciously or lacking the evidence they need to prove their case, just to have a case. They're supposed to take care of the political part of the process by hearing what the state has and returning or not returning indictment based on that. The other reason to impanel grand juries, and it's done frequently, is as fact-finding, especially fact-finding in cases of state malfeasance, and quite frequently in fact-finding in organized crime. This grand jury seems to be kind of a mixture of the two, kind of brought together as an ad hoc fact-finding jury with the power to indict.
No prosecutor in a grand jury shows a single witness that would be contrary to the case he's trying to make. That just confuses the grand jury from the point of view of the prosecutor. A defense lawyer will bring those witnesses, yes, but a prosecutor won't, and that's unheard of. You know, most grand juries are going to see the most biased argument you've ever seen in your life, and that's what they're used for.
Right.
So it's unheard of what McCullough did here. He was, you know, we can get into all that. Nixon is bad, too, in this. There's a lot of stuff that happened wrong.
Oh, yeah.
Regard to Ferguson, a lot of stuff happened wrong, and including the obvious point that Michael Brown hardly makes a poster child for an innocent victim. Okay, this given. He's not that. And it doesn't help to portray him as that. We have a situation where a kid, big kid, very big kid, robbed a store, punched a cop, got shot. Now, he's unarmed, so, you know, anytime a cop shoots somebody unarmed, he better be able to prove that his own life was in jeopardy, and that's not as easy to do either, and that he didn't have recourses. And that's the basis, to me, for the dispute It's been mishandled from day one, including by the Jesse Jacksons and Al Sharptons who come in and act like this is some choir boy who was shot going home from choir practice. No, he wasn't.
Right.
You know, and he did punch a cop, okay? So,
yeah.
You know, there's that doesn't mean he should be shot. Please understand. That is not excusing shooting this kid. But it means, you know, back off, because we needed a trial. I mean, we really needed a trial to get to the bottom of this. That's my opinion. We needed more open disclosure. We also needed a governor who wasn't an idiot. That would have helped.
Yeah.
Okay. Not that I would blame everyone in the state, but here's a tip. From St. Louis perspective, from Ferguson, Missouri, that governor's a buffoon. He didn't help. He created a state of emergency a week before this happened. He had the National Guard ready to go, and they sat there and guarded Rich Holmes and Clayton. Hello?
Yeah, I'm here. You know.
Okay, I'm sorry. Yeah,
no,
I thought we got
right.
Disconnected. But
nope.
No, I mean, the night that happened, the mayor of Ferguson is calling saying, you know, I need help. We're overwhelmed here, you know. People are burning down businesses. This is not protest anymore. This is a riot. This is vandalism. It is arson. Why did you bring the 1,000 National Guard into this community just so they could sit on their toms? You know,
well,
and that's a good question that the governor should have been asked immediately.
I agree with you. I think the National Guard should have been in place and ready to go just before the verdict was read and in knowing what was going to happen. But now, if you'll recall the day after the shooting, the night after the shooting when buildings burned, and that, if you'll recall, the mayor of Ferguson was saying, what the hell are you doing down here with this militarized police force? And so, you know, what do you do? I think I would have been in a position where I'd have said, okay, you know, you got CNN down there 2 weeks ago, or 2 months ago, chastising me for bringing in the police to protect your property and your town. And now, by God, you can beg me for them.
I mean, well, yeah, and then that's immature as well. That's all I can say. I don't want the police there, and I don't want the National Guard to touch a single protest. I want them to protect businesses. I know that sounds, you know, but when you see someone looting a business, or, you know, protect the business, don't confront protesters in the street. I don't need you there to do that. They can protest all they want. I don't care. You know, and you might even have to stomach a few, there were water balloons thrown at cops, and maybe some people threw rocks and stuff. It's not appropriate. But if you escalate something like that, you got to be careful. So make sure, because you have large crowd control situations. The National Guard is not necessarily the best ones to send in those circumstances, because they don't know what to do. They're not trained to sit there and take a brick, that's for sure. Who is, right? But cops sometimes have to do it. And people aren't going to like that either, but you don't want to escalate what could substantially be a peaceful demonstration just because one jerk is in the crowd. And believe me, we have jerks who came in from out of town. I'm going to tell you the truth. They call, you know, they're like anarcho-communists. Who knows what they are?
Oh, yeah.
They've seen
yeah.
too many money. You know, they're Black Panther trained or whatever. I don't know who they are exactly. But they are definitely outside agitators. You can't start fires like that without having been trained on some pretty sophisticated. The average person wouldn't be able to just start a fire and torch a building. You know, say, here, take some matches, go start one, okay? These people know how to make Molotov cocktails. These people know a little bit more about this and to create incendiary devices than the average person on the street would know, certainly one who shows up at a protest. And when you're, this is really what's scaring me the most. There's a criminal element involved here in addition to legitimate protests. And they may be wanting to have snipers out there. They may be wanting to shoot cops. I mean, you're going to put everybody on a... So this is the bad situation, obviously. That part's
yeah.
obvious.
I mean, they arrested a couple who had a laid-out plan for the assassination of McCullough, and and found when they got them that they had the material and plans to blow up the arch.
Yeah, that seems over their head. But
yeah.
Granted, the plans are there. So they certainly are showing this is criminal intent. This is not.
Yeah.
It's nothing to do with legitimate. Frankly, Bob McCullough, I didn't vote for the guy. I don't like the guy at all. But maybe focus your energy on the election first before you try and assassinate the man, okay?
Yeah.
Since that perhaps a little bit, because we have problems here in policing. Look at the big picture. I believe there are problems in police work that we need reforms on, okay? And they're not going to happen because we assassinate Bob McCullough. If anything, it's going to make it worse. We need the right people elected who are going to change. We need body cameras on police. I don't, frankly, if it were up to me, I would never investigate another police shooting out of the prosecutor's office. We're going to have to set up independent agencies for this. I can't trust the prosecutors to do this. I think McCullough was absolutely biased in this. And, you know, it's not acceptable. So,
well, now in Missouri, in the state law of this state, and I'm sure it applied in this case, police shootings are investigated by an outside agency, in most cases the state police.
That wasn't done in this case.
Handed
it over to the county prosecutor.
I believe that the actual investigation was done maybe at his bidding by the state police. And the FBI, of course, the problem is it was out of our hands by the 10th hour. I mean, Holder had moved in. The FBI was already here. The Federal Bureau of Investigation designed to investigate interstate crime and specifically kidnapping at their inception. The governor was already vowing a vigorous prosecution by the 12th hour. You're right. This was totally political before the sun rose the next day. Now let me ask you something, because you know that you and I disagree on this grand jury thing. Let's just go back to both being totally ignorant of the facts. Back there in whatever day that was, where neither you nor I have any idea what occurred. We've read some newspaper articles. We've read some, you know, we've seen some CNN, but we're both open-minded enough to say, okay, we're going to wait until there's actually an investigation before we say one way or the other. Let's assume then that there's a prosecutor who is watching the investigation unfold, and this thing is absolutely snowballing. The President of the United States is making statements. The Attorney General of the United States is making statements. The Governor of the state is making statements. The far right is making statements about how a cop can shoot anyone anytime he pleases just because he's a cop. And you're a prosecutor trying to do your job, and you wade in here and you start getting these autopsy reports in and these toxicology reports. And let's just play like you're looking at this stuff and you say, God, in no case ever would I bring criminal charges on this matter. Now, given all that political snowballing, what do you do? Do you just go to CNN and say, well, you know, I've looked at the evidence and I'm not pressing any, you know, I'm not bringing any charges, or do you say, okay, well, let's let a grand jury look at this and see what they say?
You know, there's nothing I can do if the prosecutor says, I looked at this, I don't want to bring charges. Okay, it's his job to make that decision. That's essentially what happened here. I mean, Officer Wilson was tried by Bob McCullough and found not guilty. Okay, I disagree. I think there was enough here for a trial, but I don't think Bob McCullough should run that trial now at all. I think that's part of the problem.
He didn't run the grand jury or have anything to do with it, with the grand jury. I mean, he
impaled. No, he does. I mean, all the guys, all the attorneys there work for Bob McCullough.
Okay.
He does take the case before the grand jury. It's his investigation. I don't know who's telling you it's not Bob McCullough's, but it is. There are two attorneys there who are bringing this stuff before the grand jury. They both work for Bob McCullough. So he's not personally there, but it's his office who controls this whole process. Absolutely, yeah. I mean, that's his job. And it's his job to bring an indictment. And normally you would wait as a prosecutor until you had, you need to find key witnesses. Okay, I don't want to confuse a grand jury. I just want to find the most important witnesses that I need in order to bring charges against the officer. That's all I need to find. And, you know, if he can't find a single credible witness, then I guess he has to say, I'm out of luck. I don't have a single credible witness.
And I understand what you're saying, Lloyd, and I agree with you. For you and I, who are sitting here keeping open minds, we may or may not agree with a prosecutor who's looked at the evidence and then comes out and has the guts to say, hey, I've looked at the evidence, there's nothing here that we're going to proceed with, that we don't have anything in hand with which to proceed. But given McCullough and given the political climate, yeah, you and I aren't the ones that are going to be reacting to his announcement in that.
It's partly the same thing with the take it back to the Zimmerman trial for a second.
Right.
And who I thought was, I mean, that's not a cop. You know, based on the testimony that I heard, he was being physically threatened by Trayvon Martin, who I believe also may have had at least some fear of his life when he attacked. Okay, so you've got a really he says, she says. But, you know, you weigh all the evidence and you realize this needs to go to a trial. I'm not trying to say, I mean, in my mind, Zimmerman had no choice. If you believe his story, which he told immediately, incidentally, and was out in the public, that his head was being pounded into the pavement, and there were other witnesses who corroborated that, then you basically say, all right, in my judgment, I think that's self-defense, so it still needs to go to a jury. You know, some of these things just cannot be decided by you and me on the phone. They have to. Our process is there enough there for a trial? Yes, I think there is. So I'm afraid we're going to have to do what we do in this society. Learn to live with it, Mr. Policeman. You, too, have to face trial sometimes. Sorry. You ain't got. Hello?
I see what... Yeah, I'm still here.
Yeah, and I think that basically if you had the trial, one doesn't know, but you certainly would have satisfied people like me who are highly suspicious now, highly... You know, I mean, I look at this as trumped up. I don't have much faith in what happened here at all. Did you know that there were 6 or 7 witnesses? I forgot. I mean, I don't have time to go through all this stuff yet. The grand jury thing is 5,000 pages of testimony. 5,000 mm-hmm. pages. That's not the work of a good prosecutor. That's the work of somebody who's trying to confuse a grand jury and keep them from indicting. So he's showing them all this conflicting testimony in order to confuse them. There are 6 or 7 witnesses. I don't know how credible they are. That's a different question. But 6 or 7 of them all said he had his hands up. I don't know if that makes a difference in people's minds. Maybe it does, maybe it doesn't that he had his hands up. Maybe he put his hands up for a little while and then he changed his mind and charged him anyway. I don't know. None of us do, okay? That needs to go to trial. You're talking a cop shooting an unarmed kid, okay? So at that point... You know, we got a tough case here. It doesn't help to handle it this way. I've given this example. I don't know if you know this example, but we all remember in American history the Boston Massacre, right?
Yeah.
And that was a case of British soldiers, redcoats, in Boston that shot unarmed citizens in a crowd. They say as a mob. It probably was, you know, maybe who knows. It's a long time ago. But they shot and killed some innocent people who were probably throwing snowballs at them, if nothing else, and probably had rocks in the snowballs. And these are kids that are scared, and they're troops, and they're British soldiers. Did that case go to trial? Yes, it did. In Boston, Massachusetts, that case went to trial, and I doubt the king was very happy about it. And you know what? They were found not guilty in that trial, too. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
So... It's not the end of the world. We'd have been so much better off. And I will never, it's very hard to persuade me otherwise. If we'd have gone to trial, we'd been better off in this community. And And that's a fact. But I don't think Bob McCullough. You know what I would do now? This is me. I would let the public defender's office be the one who investigates all police shootings and indicts if an indictment is necessary. So I'd flip the scales on these guys. And instead of the public defenders defending the public, they would actually be the ones who prosecute the police for abuses. And so we reverse the positions on these guys, and we return to the adversarial role that I think is necessary to give people the peace of mind that, you know, we really did get at the truth here. I mean, that's
okay.
Now, yeah, you see what I'm saying? I will tell you there's a lot of people out there who hate cops no matter what. I'm convinced of that. In fact, one of the disturbing things in this is that we know that some of these witnesses did make up stories that they later recanted before the grand jury, okay? You know, when push came to shove, they said, well, maybe I'm not so sure. Maybe he didn't have his hands up. Maybe the cop, you know, didn't do this or that, whatever. There's people out there disposed to lie about the cops. There's also cops who do lie themselves, and we know this as well. And there's people who defend the cops no matter what. They also exist. And we got these two warring camps that just, good luck making peace between them. I'm not in either one of those two camps, I'll tell you that. I don't want to blame cops for everything, and I don't think cops are perfect. And I need trials. I need trials as the only hope we've got. That's my position. So take it for what it's worth. I think Bob McCullough screwed us all. We should have had a trial. And
I think that a fair and public trial probably would have eased your mind. It would have eased my mind. I think it would have eased a lot of people's mind. Would it have prevented the rioting that's going on in Ferguson now? I think not.
Don't know. Neither one of us does because we didn't do it the right way. That's part of my problem. When you do it the wrong way, then you don't have an excuse when things blow up on you because you didn't do it the right way. All I know is if I do it the right way, I've done everything I can. These people have, there's no justification for burning down a Quick Trip in Ferguson because Bob McCullough screwed up.
Yeah.
These are the acts of, frankly, they're either a criminal element, which is a pretty lucky guess, or pretty, I should say, reasonable guess, or they're people so frustrated, so lacking now in hope or any avenue that they just lash out irrationally. Like the night before the thing was released, we had a lot of vandalism in St. Louis. They vandalized statues. And apparently some of these people, what they put on the statues was, if we burn, you burn with us. Okay?
Yeah.
So and the message, yeah, when I see that message, I mean, it's from a movie too, so these idiots are getting there thinking from a Hollywood movie. Not too happy about that either. You know, great, just wonderful. They think they're Hollywood stars, you know. Yeah. But what I think the subtext in it, the message to me is, you leave us hopeless, you're going down with us. Put it that way. You know, we're not going down without taking a lot of people with us. And there needs to be some acknowledgement that, you know, that I believe should have had a fair trial. That's all. I keep going back to it. I agree with at least that much. I don't, you know, the other fact here that other people must acknowledge, and we need to say this out loud, if Michael Brown had not, you know, robbed a store, if he had not punched a cop, he would be alive today. So, you know, that's what I'm saying. I'm not saying he deserved to die, but I am telling people if he had not stolen, if he had not punched a cop, he would be alive today. And that is an important message as well. Don't, you know, please obey the law. Please, you know. I'm not saying the cop was right to gun you down, but, and he's an 18-year-old kid. And that's, you know, a lot of us do some dumb things at that age, and they shouldn't be fatal. There should definitely be consequences and severe. I'm going to say, too, did you see the ABC interview with Stephanopoulos with Wilson? Because Wilson apparently was paid $500,000 to go have an exclusive interview with ABC after this happened. Yeah, I didn't either. So don't take this as firsthand, but somebody told me that one of the questions Stephanopoulos asked Wilson was, do you have any regrets about this? And, you know, he gave what I would consider to be a standard answer from an unimaginative sort of fellow, okay, who doesn't have a lot of self-reflection in him, and basically said, no regrets, my conscience is clear, you know, et cetera, I did nothing wrong. And I'm thinking, I'm not saying he did anything wrong, sir. I'm really not. I don't know that. I do know if I shot someone, even fully justified, I would have regrets.
Sure.
Okay? Just human nature to me.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm thinking, is there something else I could have done? You know, is there something else I could have done that would have solved the situation without the loss of life? And I believe all of us need to, you know, that's just, that to me tells me the kind of man we're dealing with and the police officer as well. Not saying he's guilty, not saying he did anything wrong. Just saying, doesn't seem to have much remorse about it, or at least not any self-reflection. You know, could I have found another way to solve this? I don't know that he could have either. I don't know. But I would certainly, you know, would wonder about that myself. Officer Wilson, incidentally, is not a small man. So I know a lot of emphasis is placed on how big Michael Brown is, and he's big. I think he's 6'5", 6'6", and weighed 290 pounds, am I right about that?
Yeah, you're in the ballpark with both of those, right?
You know how big Officer Wilson is? Because most people don't.
No, I don't.
He's 6'4", he weighs 210 pounds.
Yeah.
Not a small man, okay?
No.
Not easy to scare a guy that big, you know? And he's older, you know? I mean, even I was, you know, when you're 30 years old, you're 25, 30 years old, you're not really scared by young punks as much, okay? You figure, well, I'm stronger than that guy is, and I'm smarter than he is. And I'm not saying that he shouldn't have been scared, because I would also, he has the right to be scared of somebody that big, but he's pretty big himself. He can take care of himself, and he's the one that's armed. And I think part of what he has to prove in order to use deadly force is that he himself felt his life threatened. He can clearly outrun that kid. Okay, the kid is not armed. He knows he's got another police car coming, and they frankly arrived within 2 minutes. Because, you know, so it was very rapid that they got there. They got there almost as the shooting ended, apparently, and arrived very quickly on the scene. Because he had called in, shots were fired, need backup, you know, send everybody you got, is what
right.
he said. And believe me, once a cop says that, they're going to come from all over, and they got there fast.
That was
so,
after the
yeah, shot. Maybe if he,
that was after the shot was fired inside the car. Before
that's
he
correct, the shot
the
in the
right.
car. Exactly. The shot in the car is extremely difficult to verify. We generally overlook that one. I mean, the physical evidence certainly we know the shot was fired. As to what happened, whether or not he pulled the kid in or whether or not the kid lunged at him, I don't know. You know, what you basically only have Wilson's word for that at this point. I don't know where else you... Most people weren't paying attention, as far as I know, that aren't. The only other witness to that would be the guy who was a partner in the crime at the store where they stole the cigarettes, right? The cigars or whatever they were.
Well, there was one witness who said there was a second officer in the car, and she even described the officer.
Well, there wasn't, so, you know, yeah, that's... This is why a trial is also helpful, because that person, you know, frankly, that person wouldn't stand up one second and would have been in the, you know, who knows, what, maybe it was an innocent mistake on them, but they obviously didn't know what they were talking about. And you know, no one else corroborates that. There's nothing else to corroborate it. It's not true. Who knows what they were lying about. This is disturbing that, you know, people would make up something like that in this kind of situation. But it happens all around. I wouldn't waste 1 second with a grand jury showing them somebody like that. There's no need to. It's not a trial. There's no reason for them to see what you already know is not a credible witness. Why are you even bringing it up to them? It's a waste, you know? You only do that so that you're creating in the grand jury's mind, boy, none of these people know what they're talking about. No, that's not how you build a case. Yeah, I mean, Now, in a trial situation, the same thing would have happened with Officer Wilson. And when he testified to the grand jury, there's no cross-examination whatsoever. It's a very friendly testimony. That's right. Not going to happen in a trial. You're going to get grilled, mister. You're going to get grilled real hard. In fact, his defense attorney would probably tell him, don't even testify.
Yeah.
All right, make them make their case without you first. And then if we think we're losing this, then I'll put you on the stand. That's probably what would have happened in an actual trial. I think the problem there is we're talking, the police officer, in fact, I believe this strongly, anytime the police shoot anybody, they owe the public an explanation of what happened. Okay?
Yes.
And you owe it pretty quick. I'm tired of the stonewalling. You don't get.
No, I agree. I agree with that 100%.
Yeah, you just can't keep. Now, I do agree that if the police officer knows he did something wrong, okay, I'm just speculating here, then he will be highly reluctant, obviously, and he has no obligation to then incriminate himself. He can rely on his civil rights that are the same as yours and mine, but he can no longer be a police officer, and the police department can no longer stand by him. You know, he's on his own at that point. You know, in order to continue honestly with the public trust necessary for that job, you owe us all an explanation. I'm sorry, that's the rules. And if cops can't live with that, you can't be cops. One of the problems here may be that some of the reforms we need, this is an uncomfortable topic, but maybe we need to pay cops more. Maybe we need to get a higher caliber of police officer, which I don't want to insult anybody. I realize they put their lives on the line. I'm not, you know, that part's all true. But
yeah.
I need to have people sometimes who really can handle delicate situations perhaps better and don't act like they're gorillas with guns. Okay, and I'm not saying that's what Wilson did, but there's some horror stories out here. The 12-year-old boy was recently shot.
Yeah.
There's another shooting that somebody just sent me in Virginia where they shot some guy standing in his doorstep. This was 15 months ago. They still haven't given the public the story why they did it.
Right.
I can't live with that stuff. That's not the Michael Brown case, but it is.
No.
There's a case in the Ozarks where the kid drowned even when he was handcuffed and on the boat,
right.
Okay?
Yeah, fell out
you
of the
owe
boat.
The public an explanation.
Yeah.
You kind of owe the public. And frankly, the cop didn't do much. There was another boat there, apparently, that could have helped, that asked, you know, do you need help? They offered to help.
Yeah.
Nothing was said. And my goodness, that's pretty bad, okay? I'd have gone to trial on that, too, I'm afraid. That would have been.
Yeah.
Okay, you're going to. I've got enough here that this is negligent homicide. Okay, there's something wrong here. You can't just do that. Whatever. And
How about a public trial anytime the state shoots somebody? Just
yeah, well, there you go. I'm with you.
I'm
at that point myself.
Bypass the indictment process, bypass the bring in the state attorney general's office and have a trial.
Well, I probably have to have an indictment. In other words, I have to know what charge, you know. But, yeah, bring in the facts. Somebody's going to have to make the case. These are the facts. Jury, you decide what is the – evidence for guilt here? What do you think is, you know, is this person guilty of it?
I mean, that jury is the cop's employer, after all.
Yeah, he's employed by the public, by all of us. He did it in our name.
Yeah.
That's the truth. So, anyway, you know, we're a long way from being out of this.
We are in fact going to have a public trial because Eric Holder hasn't had his grand jury yet. So,
correct. There you go. That's what I'm. And there's going to be a civil suit. You know, this is. I wish it would have just been handled by McCulloch. But if we can get the right reforms, and hopefully we can think about it. I like body cameras. Body cameras would have helped Wilson because it would establish whether or not Brown actually attacked him in the car. Okay.
Yeah.
And then it would have shown, did he have his hands up or not? I mean, very quickly, you know, because he'd have it on him. We'd have the video. We'd know for a fact, you know, he lunged at him. He went for him. So there's a lot of things a body camera would have helped us in this case. Not necessarily all of them, but it's worth the money, right? What does one of those things cost? A couple thousand bucks? I don't know. Gee,
yeah, I don't,
ask some
yeah.
of the businesses. Ask some of the businesses that were burned in Ferguson if they might have contributed to that.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, I'll give you $100 for that. Yeah, sure. What the heck, you know?
Yeah.
Keep my store from being burned, sure.
All right, we're down to 19 minutes, and I do want to talk about SRA, although I do want to say to those people who are listening tonight, I'm going to talk to Lloyd this week, and we're going to get him back for a longer. I went ahead, and this is such an interesting topic, and I like talking to Lloyd, and it's the night after Thanksgiving, and our audience is way down because of that. So I'm going to talk to Lloyd this week, and we're going to get him back here in the next 3 or 4 weeks to do an entire segment related to SRA. But
you know what my expertise is in Ferguson is I live within 15 miles of it. So
yeah,
I know I'm not an expert in this case. I've done what all the rest of us have done, and that is read the accounts and try and understand them as best I could.
You are an expert in the state repeal amendment as its modern day author.
Got that right.
So how's that going? Are we
it's going.
Gonna
I've got Bob Andre is been approached for this. I think he's interested to bring it in the Senate again. John Lamping sponsored the state repeal amendment petition approach that we did last year. It was SCR 38 for people who like bill numbers and like to look them up. I think we'll file that again. I'm also looking for a sponsor this time in the House. I don't have one yet. But there's several names that we can approach, and I think we'll get one there. So I'm happy about that. There's two other states we've approached, some people, some activists in Arkansas and Colorado. I'd be heartbroken if they beat Missouri to the punch on this, but I suppose it might happen. You never know. Just so people know what a state repeal amendment is, there's an idea that I think can be traced back to James Madison. I'll sometimes call it Madison's Lost Amendment. And the basic idea is that a representative to amend the Constitution so that a representative majority of states could repeal or void, you know, nullify, get rid of an act of Congress or federal regulation in whole or part. So you can think of it as judicial review. That process or that power that has now been transferred to a representative majority of the states. That means a majority of the states, so 26 at least, who also represent a majority of American people. So they would, if you added them together, have a majority of the representatives in the House. And that's the idea. I think this is a huge transfer of power back to the states. If we had this, Obamacare would be history. I'm not surprised that, we would be able to repeal all sorts of obnoxious light bulb regulations, gun regulations, perhaps even marijuana regulations if it gets to that point, but all sorts of things that could be gotten rid of from the states themselves. Common Core would be another example. Some of this, green parkway stuff, some of the EPA stuff that goes overboard.
Yeah.
You know, we really have no way to get rid of it other than we go back to the feds all the time. I'd much rather have the states have the power to just directly go in there and say, this is gone. The funding for it's gone. It's gone. And
right. That's
the basic idea.
Exactly. And for you folks who may be joining us tonight who haven't been with us for the last year or so, this was introduced in the last session by Senator Lamping. So this will be its second attack on Jefferson City. If you have a representative out there who might be interested in carrying this in the House or co-sponsoring this in the House, get a hold of us, get a hold of Lloyd, or get a hold of us, and I'll turn you on to Lloyd. I'm talking to my representative about it now. And I know Lloyd's got a couple more in mind. Wouldn't hurt to have four or five co-sponsors on a bill like this. You're going to run into an awful lot of representatives who are going to look at it and have never thought about anything like this before, so they're going to need some time to think about it. They're going to need some. Are you going to take a trip to the Capitol to make the pitch?
Sure. I will be in the Capitol a couple. I was last year too. It didn't get a hearing last year, so
right.
You know, I'd like to push for a hearing more and give it a little bit more publicity than it got last year. Yeah, it was just, you know, this is a very abstract thing too, and it doesn't generally get a lot of attention. There's going to be, you know, these people are going to be fighting over Medicaid expansion. They're going to be fighting over Common Core, I think, still. Those two for sure. So, you know, this is very, this is like, what are you talking about again? State repeal amendment? What's that mean? You know, you almost have to explain it before you can get anybody's opinion on it.
Yeah, it's going to be a
big... And
It's going to be a busy legislative session with Common Core and Right to Work, I'm sure, will occupy quite a bit of time up there with Deal at the helm now. And probably there will be quite a bit of discussion before they propose another 3/4 cent sales tax for the Road and Bridge Department.
There'll be a transportation bill of some sort. You can guarantee that. You know, they still say they got a problem. And they just got told no very loudly as far as a sales tax solution.
That's right.
I expect red light cameras to come up too, believe it or not. That's another issue I expect to get some serious attention statewide. I don't know if you saw it, but St. Charles County, which is the largest Republican county in the state, had a red light camera ban on the initiative petition. It was put on the ballot. I don't know if it was the people that put it on, or the council there, but that thing passed 70-30. People do not like red light cameras, okay, in this part of the state. They don't like them. And that's part of the problem in Ferguson, incidentally, too. Some of these little municipalities are running, you know, half their revenues are coming from these lousy tickets. And it hurts the poor. It hurts the poor. I mean, who are we kidding? And so...
And in a city especially like Ferguson or on the south side of Springfield, where, you know, 90% of the cops are white, 90% of the residents are black. I mean, you can't escape this. You can't escape a racial overtone.
Correct.
You know, it can't be escaped. Okay. So it's the state repeal amendment, and we've used up our time before we ever got to the state.
Sorry
repeal
about that.
Amendment.
Yeah.
No. I enjoyed it. I kind of actually thought when I looked at the crowd as we were talking about Ferguson, when I looked at the crowd that's tuned in tonight, and it finally dawned on me, why the hell did I schedule this on a night when everybody's either out of town or so full of whatever the chemical is in turkey that they're still sleeping from yesterday's lunch? Why did I schedule such an important talk on this night? So what I'll do is I'll get with you this week, and you and I will probably spend an hour or hour and a half on the phone deciding what night we're going to get you back, which is the way it usually goes when I talk to Lloyd. I call him up and he answers the phone, and I say, "Hi, Lloyd," and he says, "Hi, Dave." And somewhere in the second hour, we usually get to what I called him for. So so that's fine. That's fine. I enjoy it. There's not a guy in the world I like chatting with more than Lloyd. I know we talk here on the air like we're lifelong friends, but I've met Lloyd one time in my life. It was an interesting meeting, but
that meeting still continues to this day.
I
agree with you. I just want to echo that. You know, I'm sorry we got distracted, and it was not my intent either.
No.
Ferguson is on everyone's mind.
It is,
and it's important. And I agree, it's important. But what's also important, and we cannot say this enough. We have long-term problems in America. We must focus on these long-term problems, or they will kill us. as well. And yeah, they will absolutely. Their country is suffering under what I would say is major constitutional problems that we have got to start addressing. And they all kind of come together. It's very important.
And so I'm gonna go ahead. We're gonna sign off for tonight, Lloyd. I will get with you this week, and we'll chat about when we can do this again on a more productive evening, where we can just jump right into the topic of the state repeal amendment and some of the other things that we need to do. Because the state repeal amendment is extremely important, but it's not the only thing we need to do to, and here's where I kind of segue the show back on track to return sovereignty, of government back to the states where it was born. The state repeal amendment is a huge, huge, if not the most important, step in getting that done. But until the states are ready, willing, and able, and I'm glad to hear you have two more states on board, because that's two more out of, that's 47 to go if we can get Missouri in gear. Until the states are ready and willing and able, let me say, to take back the reins of their own government, we are forever doomed to looking at things like Romney versus Obama. And it mattering. Here, this is what's important, brothers and sisters, and it mattering. If the states take over, if the states can return the government of both the states and the relationship between the states and the federal government, let Romney and Obama happen. Outside the realm of ISIS and Russia, which will always be an important impact of presidential politics. But outside the realm of that, when it comes down to light bulbs and toilets, when it comes down to education, none of it will matter. It won't matter whether it's Obama or Romney. And that's where we need to be. We need to, once again, through the regaining of the sovereignty of the states over their federal government, reach a point where the president of the United States is insignificant to your everyday life. Where the entire executive department of the federal government is insignificant to your day-to-day living.
Certainly, on most matters, they are. They're state matters. Education's a state matter. There's no reason why electing, and marriage is a state matter. There's no reason why we should be deciding. The president should decide all these things that are none of his business.
How do you feel about abortion should be an illegitimate question to a presidential candidate? I don't want to say illegitimate in that you don't have a right to ask it. Immaterial is exactly what I meant to say. Okay, Lloyd, you and I will talk this week. I promise you, listeners, we'll get Lloyd back. We'll talk more about state sovereignty and the state repeal amendment and the things that matter to you more than Ferguson and cop trials. But I love talking to Lloyd about these things. I tell you what. And this can be a lesson to each and every one of us, and I'm not holding myself and or Lloyd up as role models here. But if you can find a person in your life, in your family or in your friend circle, in your close friend circle, who you can sit down and talk about something that you disagree with, the way Lloyd and I just talked about the grand jury in Ferguson, then you have reached a milestone in your life. In my mind, there's no one. If I have to discuss with someone a subject about that he or she and I disagree about, there's no one I would rather do it with than someone like Lloyd Sloan. And you've just heard that happen. So do that. I mean, find intelligent people that you can disagree with, that can have logical, non-judgmental discussions with you, and you will both widen your own horizons and learn a thing or two along the way. Lloyd, thanks
for joining. You'll strengthen your own position too, which is what always happens when we talk. I feel like I come out stronger, better, and some of my errors get corrected, which I always like doing. rather not have them, rather get them fixed, before they get me in trouble.
Thanks, Lloyd. Have a great night.
Appreciate it, Dave. We'll do it again.
Yes, sir.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Well, you too, sir. Okay, that's it, folks. With Lloyd, I'm going to take tomorrow night off. We do our family Thanksgiving thing on Saturdays, so I'm going to take tomorrow night off. And we'll be back next Friday night with a Cracker Jack show. I'm sure that Mike Slack is taking his time off to line us up something really, really dynamite for next week. I want to thank you all for tuning in on this Friday night after the holiday. I want you to all be thankful for something in your life, as I am thankful for all of you who tune in. You have a great night. I'm Dave. This was the State Sovereignty Show, and we're signing out for Thanksgiving week.